Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me is, as always, is Spencer Shalom Williams.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it works.
No, it doesn't.
It definitely works. No. It's like SSW. Yeah. There you go. It works. I don't know.
What is happening already?
This movie has been a really interesting ride, and I'm actually glad we saw it, and I'm even more excited to actually talk about it. We are going to be reviewing the recently released, straight from the Toronto International Film Festival, a horror movie in the month of March. We are reviewing The Vigil. So stick around as we dive into that, because we have a lot to say, and honestly, probably on the most different of sides on this film, so we'll discuss that in a second. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosopher and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We have over 250 episodes. Last week, we talked about one of the more talked about films from HBO, which I believe Daniel Kaluuya actually won the best supporting role for the film.
As he should have,
definitely. That was Judas and the Black Messiah. Check it out, lesson 255. It was a great conversation, and really learned a lot out of that. But yeah, we have a lot of great shows in store for you. Check them out after you check out this episode, as well as our social pages at Filmlosophers, facebook.com/Filmlosophers, and our Twitter and Instagram at Filmlosophy101. This is a very interesting movie that we're going to be traversing into, as it's a little different than most horror films as of late. And the interesting thing is, me and Spencer saw it at two different times. I kind of wanted to do like a little social experiment, because I wanted to see if Spencer could actually handle watching a horror movie on his own. Not to say that you're not capable. Don't give me that look. I'm not drunk. I'm not trying to say anything by that. All I'm saying is I wanted to see.
You're saying plenty already, but okay.
You know what? I'm just saying it's a movie that definitely was getting a lot of attention at TIFF, and now that it's been released on video on demand, I definitely wanted to check it out. So, let's just get this ball rolling as we jump into the review of The Vigil. This was a film that was actually done back in 2019, but wasn't able to be released until as of late. It did do the independent film circuit, like I said, with Toronto Independent Film Festival, and then finally made its way to video on demand, which we got a chance to see at a pre-screening, so to speak.
Yep.
We got to see the majority of it. We didn't get a chance to finish it. Hey, we're learning how to screen movies in the times of COVID, okay?
It's hard.
It is. So before we go any further, Spencer, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
Low on funds and having recently left his insular religious community, Yakov recently accepts an offer from his former rabbi and confidant in it to take on the responsibility of an overnight shomer, fulfilling the Jewish practice of watching over the body of a deceased community member. Shortly after arriving at the recently departed, dilapidated house to sit the vigil, Yakov begins to realize that something is very, very wrong.
Directed and written by Keith Thomas, the film stars Dave Davis, Malky Goldman, Menashe Lustig, and Lynn Cohen. This is actually the director's directorial debut. This is his first major feature film, which is interesting enough in itself because of the fact that this particular movie, there's a lot to break down within this film, and the fact that this director wanted to really make a statement with a movie like this. When we got the press screening of it, it came with one of the director's statement, And he had stated, he goes, when I sat down to write the very first draft of The Vigil, I knew I wanted to tell a personal story that felt universal. The movie would be very contained, and the stakes would, at least at first glance, seem small. One man, one ritual, and one struggle with a threatening force. But the stories I gravitate towards, the stories I like to tell, are rooted in tangible human experience. One person's struggle can take on a mythic quality that resonates far more than stories and about countries or even worlds at war. So he ultimately took his own personal experiences within his own heritage, his Jewish background, and wanted to traverse into a story that not only fed into what people, you know, what they thrive on when it comes to horror films, but also one that had actual lore and mythos within the Jewish community. So that's an interesting stance to take. That's like saying, you know, I want to create a movie that is, first off, decent enough that it's good, and then number two, I want it to be steeped in like Latin, you know, folklore, things like that, you know, which they kind of did, came out with the horror movie Coco. So but I say all that to say it's really interesting to see a movie like this that got a lot of attention in Toronto and is now making its circuits as of late, where the reviews are beginning to drop all over the place and people are giving it high praise, to be honest. So but we got a chance to see this movie, and you saw it actually before I got to finish watching it. And like I said, I wanted to see if you were actually going to be able to finish the movie. And I don't mean
like
that
I
like
can finish a movie, Eddie. Like I've been doing it for decades.
Well, I mean, we're not going to get into the whole Christmas thing again, because that was a debacle that should not have taken 3 years.
Anyway.
Ah, yeah, I got you there.
Whatever.
Oh, but this is a movie that I wanted to see, like, how much it was going to affect either of us, to be quite honest,
mm-hmm.
in the aspect of being able to see a movie that tried to stay true to some roots, you know? It wasn't like a movie that was just like, oh, this is a scary movie for the sake of being scary. This movie has heritage on its side. It's got folklore. It's got things of that nature, which, to be quite honest, I'm gonna be extremely real. I don't know a lot about the Jewish customs or religion, Judaism. I'm not too sure about much of that. However, as somebody who enjoys the artistry and the beauty in customs passed down from years and years and years of tradition, the Jewish culture has always seemed very, what's the word? Very ornate, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Like everything that they do, every part of their culture seems to surround ritual and routine and just like beauty in it all. Like I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. But like, okay. So a while over 10 years ago, I used to have this friend who heavily identified with the Jewish culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, again, this was me walking into a test I was not ready for, because there were certain things happening. I'm like, I could visualize it like in from the past, and I couldn't remember. And so like there were certain things that like should not have been frustrating to anyone, but because like I kind of sort of didn't really remember,
uh-huh.
It was bugging me the whole movie.
From the movie.
Yeah, of like him doing certain things. I'm like, I know this is important, but I can't for the life of me remember what its symbolism is.
And to be honest, I have to slightly agree. Like there was a lot of things that happened in this movie that I needed context for. However, the execution, if you will, of how a lot of the parts of this movie kind of transpired, it still stood out to me as a very beautiful element to a horror movie. Because if you take a look at the Jewish culture, yes, there's many, many, many stereotypes of the Jewish culture. I mean, let's just be honest. The Jewish culture has been kind of bastardized, if you will, for many a year, whether if it was in TV, in cartoon, in movies, in, you know, public humiliations, in like they're still widely targeted for hate crimes, and it's crazy because if you look at a lot of the Jewish culture and the Jewish tradition, a lot of it is just really beautiful. A lot of it is just steeped in heritage, where you stop and ask yourself, as like, you know, why, almost like, why doesn't my culture have that? And it's just, it's crazy how much the director implemented a lot of that into this movie. I mean, would you agree there's a fair...
No, I thought it was cool because, like, I can't even think of another movie where, like, you saw, like, that much from, like, the Jewish culture in it.
Yeah, that I've seen. I don't really... Like, aside from movies that kind of use it as a plot device, or like, oh, you know, like take for instance Guy Ritchie's Snatch, where Benicio del Toro plays a Hasidic Jew, or he plays somebody who dresses up as a Hasidic Jew. I mean, it's interesting for the plot, but it doesn't really do much to honor that culture, which it's interesting because you think about it and you think about like the Jewish culture, you think about the traditions that they hold. And as much as people kind of like talk about it and the way they treat it, it makes you wonder, like, if anybody did that to your beliefs or the things like that, would you feel, how would you feel if, you know, movies took that kind of, I don't know. It's very interesting. The whole idea of Jewish custom and tradition is very unique to me because of the fact that it's something we grew up with. It's something that, I mean, you just said you had somebody who identified as the church that we had grown up in when I was younger would regularly have like rabbis come in, and they would, during Passover, they would show us what the Passover feast looked like and things like that, and Hanukkah, and it was really great. Like, just seeing it was a spectacle in itself because of how beautiful it was. But to kind of take this instance and this particular situation and take it for a different perspective of now you're using your Jewish custom and culture to ward off evil, is just, it's kind of cool to me. I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, but also kind of confusing from like a world building perspective.
How so?
Like, how many of these Mazics are running around? Because I feel like it should be like, even if there's like this might should be slightly more well known than it is.
I see, and that's the thing. I don't know, because I don't know many Jewish people who practice well enough to be able to give me an answer like that, like to say, oh, well, you know, the mazik is something that, you know, every, you know, young Jewish person has to face when they come of age or blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. Those are things I don't know. And to be quite honest, it really feels kind of like one of those hidden closet type things for a culture to be like, oh, by the way, as a Jewish person, you have to deal with things like this. Like, I don't know if a lot of Jewish people want to publicize that kind of thing. Like, oh, by the way, you join us and you have to deal with the this guy and whatever. Like, I don't know if that's something that they regularly talk about, you know? Hmm. But this is a very interesting movie in that it combines tradition and culture and folklore in a very compelling story that is not only just a horror movie. It's a horror movie on the surface. But deeper than that, it really transcends the idea of what you get when you have people who face an immense amount of grief and what that looks like and how it can be almost personified, if you will. So like I said, we're going to talk about this movie as we dive in, and this will be a no-spoiler review, so you won't have to worry about spoilers. I really do think this is a movie that people should see to experience on their own, but before we get into that, I want to remind you, yeah, we're not going to have any spoilers, so Spencer's going to have to bite his tongue on a lot of things. Diving into the movie, there's not a lot of actors in the film itself, let alone in the majority of the scenes. Like 80% of the movie is just this man who plays Yakov and the Mrs. Litvak, the widow of the gentleman who passed. And I mean, if you want to count the body, then I guess, you know, the body. But you have these two main people throughout the entire film, and you ultimately find out that this man who has just passed had something follow him from when him and his wife migrated to the U.S. And this thing is, it's like an entity, but at the same time, it's, what does the old lady call it? She says that it's his emotions or his memory or his fear, something to that effect.
I don't remember.
I believe it's like memories. I think it's memory.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you recognize that Yakov is being tormented by whatever is going on in this home from this spirit that is wherever it is. And it's interesting. I've never known the custom for the Jewish people to have a shomer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure we're probably mispronouncing it. So if you're Jewish and you're listening to us, please don't bite our heads off. We're not Jewish. I don't know if there's one of those sounds with the back of your throat in that. I don't know. I'm just, you know, saying it as it's spelled.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of a shomer is very, very interesting. It takes hired grievers to a whole nother level. Because, I mean, let's be honest, there are people out there who hire grievers to show up to anybody, to a specific person's funeral, so that way they can, you know, cry and wail and make it seem as though this person was, like, immensely loved. Are you not aware of that?
That sounds ridiculous and a waste of money.
But people pay for it.
Okay.
Yeah, no joke.
Well, at least I understand a shomer more than that.
Well, I'm glad you do too, because this is a very interesting place for somebody to be, where you are asked to show up at a home to watch a body overnight while repeating prayers and psalms until the next morning when, what, like shift change or?
Well, that's when they were taking the body away.
Okay, so it is when they're taking the body away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so am I to assume, and maybe you caught this before I did, and this is just clarification, am I to assume that the man had just recently deceased? Like, did he just recently pass?
Well, I would hope so, because he wasn't refrigerated, so he's gonna...
I don't mean it like that. Like, I mean, like, because that's another question that I have. I don't know a lot about this culture. But did he pass, and then they placed him on the table, and were like, okay, we have to come in the morning to pick him up. Until then, we need to get a shomer, to somebody to watch the body and protect it from evil spirits. Like, am I to assume that's how it happened?
I would also guess that is how it happened. I'm not sure.
But it's an interesting situation. I mean, nonetheless, like, this person is... So first off, I think the most interesting part of this movie is that it is establishing that there are people who... And mind you, there's people like this in all religions, but there are people who have defected from the Jewish faith, I guess, if you want to call it that. They've stepped away from their faith in Judaism and are now trying to, like, reintegrate into society.
Is that what was happening?
At the very beginning.
Because I was under the assumption that they were a part of, like, some insular sect of Judaism. Because, like, to my knowledge, like, you don't have to cut yourself off from the rest of the world like these people were talking about.
I didn't think they were cutting themselves. I
see, this is one of the issues I took place. Like, I had a problem with the movie was that they introduced this interesting like idea, but then they didn't flesh like of like them like being part of some sort of like religious thing, but they didn't really fully expand upon it enough for me to understand, like, you know, why they were so adamant to be away from these people or what these people even did to them, really. So, like, I have, like, lots of questions about what was happening before the movie started.
And so in that mindset, I think it's very similar to kind of like if you're somebody who's ever burned by, like within the Christian faith, let's be honest, you know, because we both have gone down that road several times. In the Christian faith, sometimes a church will burn you. Like, you will get burned from a church, whether if it's in a good way or if it's in, like, in a heinous way. Either way, it's usually not amicable. It's usually a situation that drives somebody from once being a prominent part of that community, I guess. They now are withdrawing themselves from that community entirely. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it's like that.
Well, the thing is that like they were complaining about not having basic life skills.
Yeah.
And so that makes me think like they were like somewhere where they were not with like the rest of society. That's what it implied to me. And so like, but they never really expressly said, so I'm like, I don't know. Like, because like, yeah, there's like there are some crazy Christian religious cults that do that, but there's also some crazy ones that don't do that. And so I'm like, we're on the crazy scale for Judaism. Are we on this? Like,
yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at in terms of like recognizing, okay, I get it. There is this group of people who are choosing to separate themselves because it does kind of show as an obvious point when, Yaakov's former rabbi and confidant, as we mentioned earlier, shows up and is like, "Oh, you know, Yaakov, how's it going?" And it's almost like a protective situation where the head or whatever you want to call it of this group of defectors, if you will, like comes in and is like, "Why are you here? You need to leave him alone." It seemed almost like when you see people who are in a unique relationship that they've broken off and they're like, "Oh, I don't ever want to see so-and-so again." And you're like, okay. And you're super protective if that person ever comes by. That's kind of how it felt in that situation. But like I said, I don't, it kind of goes back to just my experience with that culture. Like I can understand the defecting part. That part I can understand. I can understand leaving a religious group that is so constricting and so demanding that it's like, yeah, I need space from you.
Mm-hmm.
But in that same instance, I don't know if that's because, like I mentioned, the Jewish culture has a very religious and like routined way of doing things. I don't know if there was like a whole ritual that they had to do to get out of it. Like, not, and I don't say ritual, like a custom or a way, like, I don't know what, you know, there's just a lot of questions and not bad questions. I don't want it to sound like I'm just completely, this movie made me completely inept. No, like this movie gave me a lot of opportunities to ask more questions of the people that I do know that are either of Jewish descent or are current members of the Judaism religion, mm-hmm. you know? But so you have this instance where Yaakov's former rabbi comes by and he offers him the opportunity to be a shomer. And apparently Yaakov's struggling to find work. And like you were saying, those basic life skills, he had trouble apparently having a resume ready.
Yeah.
Which that's kind of where it's like, I wonder, like, what was the situation before?
Like, it's just like pepper throughout the movie of just like something went very wrong.
Yeah.
But the movie's unwilling to explain that, which I really want to know, because I feel like even just like peppering in like, you know, a backstory of like what happened and how he got here, that would have been really interesting.
So from that particular scene, from that portion of the film, we move over to where Yaakov takes on the offer from his former rabbi and goes to be the shomer of a home of a recently deceased individual. It's this movie kind of comes in with the intention of it being like this haunting film, and then in another instance completely changes the mindset of the film altogether in terms of what it's actually showing as the main antagonist of the film. One of the things that I have to say is like the acting on the actor who plays Yaakov, which is Dave Davis, I believe. He does a really great job of conveying a lot of that emotion and a lot of that inner struggle that one would face with everything he's faced in his past. You learn throughout the film that Yaakov, when he was still a Hasidic Jew, lost his younger brother to ultimately a hate crime incident, because in the situation his brother ends up dying. And Yaakov, throughout all that time, you don't know how long it had been since that happened and till today, till that current time. But it apparently is enough time to where he had made the decision to step away from his faith, to defect, I guess, from it, and then to ultimately, and to be living with that guilt for all that time. And that is a big part of this film. This movie really paints a very unique picture of what guilt looks like, not just on the behalf of Yaakov, but even on the behalf of the person who had just passed, Reuben, because the interesting aspect of this movie is the thing that is terrorizing them is not something otherworldly ultimately to affect, but it is actually the manifestation, if you will, of their grief and their hardship plaguing them. It's very unique, and I like I said, this goes back to the mindset of, I don't know how much of this is steeped in like truth of the lore that the Jewish people have. Like, I don't know if they actually have, you know, stories of, oh well, this demon or golem is going to come after you if you don't, you know, resolve all your, you know, guilty thoughts or whatever. I don't know. That'd be really weird. But at the same time, it also would be one of those things where I would probably want to know more just to understand it better. And honestly, I feel like this movie with the particular actors that are involved, they really do translate the situation of what is happening to the audience really well, from Yaakov's perspective to even Mrs. Litvak, Mrs. Litvak's perspective as well, and it really does create that sense of dread and fear, with almost a sense of like wonder and curiosity of what the heck is going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, because I can think of two scenes like where like it just kind of hangs on things, and I'm like, is it over? Or are we gonna like do something else? Like, the movie is pretty good at building tension, because like even when I know something is coming, like it doesn't ease it in this movie for some reason.
Yeah, no, this movie does a really, really unique job of creating that sense of foreboding, the looming feeling. And here's the great thing about this movie. I have to appreciate the fact that this movie doesn't use a lot of bombastic musical cues to where it's like, oh, this scene is happening, so we need to like use the brow and like the really loud noise when it comes around the corner. Like, everything is foreboding, everything is building. Even some of the music that they use, it is to build that scene. And sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes the music does get to a point to where it's loud, like it is happening, you are in the moment, but it is to drive the emotional awareness and the emotional concern that the characters are having. And it really creates a different type of dread in itself, where it's not like, oh, I'm walking down this dark hall by myself, and then all of a sudden, like, these crazy strings play and somebody walks by the scene. Like, no, yeah. There's no cheap gag in this movie.
Which I'm glad there's not, because I'm tired of seeing that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that much.
100%. Like, that's one of those situations where you're like, that is a horror movie who is latching onto all of the cheap thrills and cheap moments by forcing it with loud noise. Like, when you go to those kinds of movies, you're not scared of what's on the screen. You're scared of the sound that's coming out.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to jump when the decibels go from 0 to 2,000 instantly with a drum or whatever. There's no other way around it. You are scaring people with your soundtrack, which says a lot. And speaking of soundtrack, this movie doesn't really have a big soundtrack. It has a few scores here and there, but nothing substantial and enough that honestly, in preparation for the show, I didn't find a lot of songs that go with the film. It's not that that's a bad thing. It's just to say that, you know what, this movie doesn't rely on that as its main drive. It relies on its emotional kind of prowess and its recognition of the journey for the main character as its main drive.
Yeah, you know? Some movies are like that, where they just don't like heavily rely on their sound, and like, you know, what they do have is just supposed to fade into the background because that's not what it's about.
Yeah,
yeah.
When I think about that, I think of Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oof,
which
that one had an amazing soundtrack.
It did, and the thing is, the soundtrack wasn't anything fancy. It wasn't anything like there was no massive orchestra and all this. It was it was simple, yet it fed into the background of the movie, where it added to the scene and it didn't become the main focus of the scene.
Yeah.
And that was one of those things that I appreciated about that movie. So coming to this movie, I appreciated the fact that the music was not the driving force. It was more so of the kind of like the binder, if you will, the glue that brought together the scene to the main point as to where the character was taking us to. And it was really great. I mean, I actually enjoyed having those high moments in the music, those really like, you know, those really built up moments where, you know, the main character is about to face this demon, or this main character is about to go through this door, or this main character is watching this video, or this main character is, you know, the things that he was doing, that he was driving at, that he was moving towards. The music never created like more dread than what was expected out of the scene. That's not to say that the movie didn't have like creepy points. Like there were several scenes where I genuinely kind of jolted. Like there was a scene with Yakov. He thought he heard the old woman going up the stairs. And he actually goes to this, or he hears her by the stairs, and he goes over to see her. And mind you, it's a really low-lit film. It's a very dark film. But you see him go over, and you see her just, like, scatter up the stairs. And you're like, oh. And then she pops out from behind him and is like, oh, okay. I'm going to turn on light.
All right, so going back to it being about a low-lit film, I feel like it actually might be too low. Because,
really?
Like that scene you described, like I remember her being behind him. I don't remember her being on the stairs at all. I didn't see that.
Yeah, she scurried up the stairs like really, really fast.
I didn't see it at all.
Maybe it's the low light levels on your TV.
I was watching on my computer.
Even worse. but this is one of those movies where, yes, I do feel like at certain points in time it is a little too dark. However, the overall achievement that it does create with recognizing somebody who is facing like just issue after issue with life and needing to kind of confront that even on a religious level, we have come to a point to where we are inundated with movies about demons from the Judeo-Christian hell, or the devil, or creepy nuns, or possessions, or priests coming in to do exorcisms, or people who are what are they called, demonologists, who have like degrees in biblical theology, things like that. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, in a world where a lot of our movies and a lot of our horror films are inundated with this overwhelming sense of Christian focus points, like, okay, the only way to solve this issue is you have to see a priest and drink 12 gallons of holy water. Like, in situations where that's the focus of it, coming into an opportunity where you're seeing a movie where the protagonist wears a yarmulke and straps on a praying garment, if you will, or a praying, what is it called?
It's called a
teflon.
Teflon, yes.
Yeah. Which is really crazy in itself. Do you know what a teflon is?
That's the thing that bothered me, because like it was explained to me and I should know this, but I can't remember it.
So a teflon is essentially, it's a small wooden box that has a piece of parchment in it that has words written on it from the Torah. I think it's the Torah. I'm not too sure. But it's in the box in itself, and you wear it around your head, so it's right there on the forefront, and the leather straps kind of wrap around to your hands, and you use it as part of like your morning prayers.
Because it was almost morning. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and what he was praying to when that scene came about, he was doing those morning prayers. Seeing somebody like that be the savior of the day against an otherworldly supernatural force, it gives opportunity for people, for young people especially, who are so used to seeing like, oh, the only way I can save the day is if my wooden cross is held up and my bottle of holy water is filled and like throw it out. Like, not to say that there's anything wrong with that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying this gives diversity in a genre that's not really used to being diverse. When it comes to situations like this, you usually have like, oh, you have the man of the cloth versus the creatures of the night, or you have the holy man who is taking on the undead, or that's the typical frame of reference. That's what it's always been.
Yeah,
and in this situation, we have somebody who is, number one, who is struggling with his own faith and his own management, I guess, of his own feelings and emotions, in the Jewish faith, taking on things that are considered otherworldly or even demonic in that faith, in the microscope or in the lens of that faith. And I think that's great. I think that's such a respectable and honest and refreshing thing to see in a horror movie, because let's be honest, I'm kind of over the exorcism movies. I'm completely over anything more with Ed and Lorraine Warren, the people who did like all the Annabelle movies and the Conjurings. You do know that's all a franchise, right?
Yeah, I heard about that.
They're all from it's all the stories from the same two people, and it's like I'm kind of done with all those. Like, there's only so much bumps in the night you can, monetize, and I do not want to see another movie about
it.
But what
about
doll.
The new one where Annabelle gets a hat?
Are you serious?
No.
Okay. I was like, for a second there, I actually slightly believed it, knowing the way that franchise goes. But it's all
sad.
In that direction.
Really,
like,
sad.
I think I want to say they're doing another one that's based on the story of the nun. So apparently in like the third Conjuring or whatever, the second one, there's the protagonist, the evil entity, is like this crazed nun, this spiritual demonic crazed nun, where they actually went into the backstory of the making of that one in the movie called The Nun. And then I think they're doing another movie that's on the backstory of that nun. Like, it's weird. Why? It's like this spider web that nobody asked for. I don't get it. And to be quite honest, I thought we were done with possession movies back in like the late 2000s, you know, because of the fact that I'm so glad there's no more Paranormal Activity movies. And the exorcism movies kind of went out the woodwork because, like, you had the exorcism of Emily Rose, the exorcist, what is it? The exorcism. There's another exorcism movie that was like from a handheld point of view, which was really interesting because that one, I forget what it's called, but that one was like, he was essentially a fraud and he was doing one last exorcism before he completely just got out of the game, I guess, if you want to call it. And showed like how he would manipulate people into thinking that, oh, you are possessed, you need my help because I need to save you from the devil and make you blah blah blah. Like, so it was really interesting, but it was like, I'm done with those movies. And the fact that they're continuing to pop out and come to like movie theaters or video on demands, I'm just done with all of it. And I wish that it wasn't so much of a focus point for a lot of people. Like, everyone's like, oh my god, the new Conjuring movie is so great. Did you not see the last one? The guy looked like something out of, like, you know, Yo Gabba Gabba, which he did.
Yo Gabba Gabba?
He did. He looks like something out of Yo Gabba Gabba. I say all that to say, having the opportunity to take fresh eyes, take a different, unique look into what another faith sees as like supernatural antagonizing, you know, what that looks like and how that looks like to be resolved, you know. And it's a really great thing. It's a really great opportunity, you know, to see somebody take their faith and put it into a format on screen that really blows people away.
Something else I also do appreciate, even though it kind of annoys me, but I still appreciate it, is the fact that it's not willing to over-explain things that are like a part of the Jewish faith. Like the Teflon thing wasn't even explained. He just put it on and he was like going to town. Like, I kind of like that because, like, I don't know. I feel like since Christian movies are so dominant and like, they also have a tendency of not explaining things sometimes. Like, I kind of like the fact that, like, you know, this movie is, like, for Jewish people who are going to get it, you know?
Yeah. By the way, this is what the scary thing looks like in Conjuring 2.
What? This looks like a joke.
I'm not lying. That's him. See? It's just, there is picture upon picture.
I feel like that would be in, like, a really bad Slender Man game, like, sequel.
Like, that's what he looked like up close.
Yeah. Slenderman games.
He looks like my old librarian, Mr. Breeden.
Did he? Was he wearing glasses on?
He did. He was a librarian who would wear glasses and he would have a pack of cigarettes rolled up in his sleeve. I went to a great school, okay? Now, but, yeah, I feel like having this opportunity, I don't mind if there is an opportunity to tie faith with supernatural opposition. But if you're not going to stray very far from the cookie cutter, then just stop, you know? Like, I don't need 12, you know, exorcism movies or anything like that that pretty much all fit the same formula if the first one or the first two did it already, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a filmmaker, at some point in time, you start transitioning over from being a filmmaker to just being like, you're just mooching off of people by creating another, like, oh, we're creating another Conjuring movie where this time they're going to get chased by a balloon. Like, I don't know. Like, something to that effect would make sense to me. I feel like they would find a way to make that make sense. This killer, you know, animal balloon, you know, balloon animal thing is after them and it's got sharp teeth and it it will sing a Barney song at the end of this movie. Okay, I don't know.
I have one last off-topic question to ask you. What would you rather sit through, a Conjuring movie or another Sharknado movie?
Why would you do that to me?
Because inquiring minds want to know.
Your inquiring mind wants to know, not anybody else's. I don't know. I would probably have to say I would go to sleep. That is my choice. I don't know. I would probably have to say another. I don't want to see either. Like, they're both. No.
That's why it's a hard question, man.
I'd probably have to say another.
I like how you're like struggling.
I am, because it's like I don't want to sit through another Sharknado movie. I don't. What was Ian Ziering's name in the movie?
Finn.
Finn, no, don't go near there. Oh my God. Oh, there's sharks everywhere. Like, I don't want another one of those. I do not want to see Tara Reid on screen again. I feel like that woman should just retire.
I would definitely watch another shark.
Oh no.
Tara Reid was in it?
No.
She's a train wreck. Of course I'm going to watch that.
She is a train wreck. Why would you want to watch that? Like, the whole, her whole premise in that movie just makes no sense. Finn. Let's go. The Sharknado's coming.
Okay, we have to go back up to the vigil. Keep talking about Sharknado.
I don't know. I would probably pick another Conjuring movie just so that I would give it another chance. I already know Sharknado is not going to make anything out of themselves. But back on the vigil, back on an actually good movie, it is a very sincere film. It is, when as this film wraps up, it has a lot of heart to it, and there's a lot of sincerity, and there's a lot of, like, you can tell there's a lot of personal, you know, a lot of personal intentionality by the director as this film wraps up and as it concludes. It's definitely not a movie that you would expect to feel that way, especially when it comes to movies that have severe spiritual opposition, like, you know, you think Poltergeist or Exorcist, whatever. But this is a movie that you actually feel like you can take away something from the film and you can actually enjoy the lessons that it's giving, you know? Hmm. I, to be quite honest, and it's weird because I didn't find out until after I thought about it that it's something people have actually said, but this has a very similar vibe like the Babadook, which was done in New Zealand back in like 2014 or 2015, I forget. But the Babadook has a very unique and interesting way it wraps up the film, where you realize that the film, the antagonist, the main issue all along is not this supernatural creature. It is manifested in it, but the main issue is not in this entity, but it's in each other. It's how we are processing grief, how we process guilt, how we process loss, how we process how life has sometimes, like, done us wrong. And I think with this movie does a really great job of recognizing that, yes, this spirit, this thing, doesn't necessarily ever go away. However, the people who are fighting it, the people who continue to fight it, are learning every day how to overcome it daily. You know what I'm saying?
Are we talking about the Mazik still, or are we talking about, like, actual trauma?
Well, and that's the thing. The Mazik is representative of that trauma in the movie.
Yeah.
And trauma doesn't ever really go away, which means the Mazik for now is, you know, sated, but it's still technically there. And that's what the wife had mentioned previously, that her husband had spent years in trying to, you know, release himself from it. However, it never really went away.
I thought it was because he didn't do the first night burning.
No.
What?
The first night burning?
Yeah. That's the only time you can get rid of it. That's what he said in the video.
In what burning?
Like, you have to burn its face off the first night it appears, or it's going to haunt you forever. That was what the husband said in the recording that Yakov found in his study.
Well, yes, I remember that part. But I feel like in this particular instance, he still has to face, like, the guilt that represented with the Mezik. I feel like it's still something that he's still continually fighting.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's not fighting the Mezik properly.
No. I don't mean the Mezik properly. Yeah. I mean the trauma.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was meaning.
Okay.
The trauma. Okay. I'm like, no, the trauma's still there. Like, no, it got rid of it after the first burning. I'm like, how do you burn trauma? But I mean, you get burn trauma, but you can't burn trauma. And that's where, like, with this particular entity, the opportunity to face that for him and to see how someone can kind of personify that into an instance where they can overcome and learn how to overcome it daily, you know, by being, you know, strong and recognizing, you know, sometimes faith goes a little bit further than just showing up, you know. But yeah, there's a lot to this film. There's a lot, you know, anyone can dive into and really kind of pick apart. I think overall it's a great film that recognizes a lot of situations that we tend to, you know, that we tend to kind of minimize in our life, whether if it's dealing with guilt, dealing with trauma, dealing with pain. We as a people tend to just try to subside it, and we try to minimize it. We try to not look into it. And I think this opportunity for Yakov really gave him an opportunity to grow and be better, you know, as a human, not just as a Jewish person, but as a person in general, you know. Were there any other issues that you had with the movie, or even things that you didn't really, aside from the low lighting?
Aside from the low lighting? I guess just general questions about logistics. Like, that's really, I feel like, most of my problems with most movies. Like, this is where, like, logistically. Because, like, my initial question is, like, Yakov, when he first gets there, he falls asleep. So if he had actually done the job he was paid to do at the beginning, would this have happened to him? Because, yes. Why?
Because, like the old woman says, the entity finds someone else who's broken and latches onto them.
So the prayers do nothing for him.
The prayers weren't for him in the first place. The prayers.
Well, see, this is like the logistics I'm talking about. Like, I don't understand how things work.
The prayers were for the deceased.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with Yakov.
See, I guess
that's why at the beginning the wife was the widow was like, no, he can't be here. He has to go. He has to leave.
And then, like,
Olivier.
Why is she okay ish?
Because she's not broken.
Why is she not?
Because she's not. I mean, not every person who loses somebody is broken. Some people are just not. Like, it's difficult. Like, just because you face something doesn't mean that you are now completely broken and destitute. The fact, though, that Yakov never really fully processed him losing his younger brother and is still struggling to find his own identity makes him broken. He faces guilt every day. He continually blames himself, which was very much obvious throughout the movie. He had issues with himself.
Okay. But, like, so it only goes after broken people?
That's what they said in the movie.
I don't understand how, like, the mechanics of this monster. Like, I guess that's really my main complaint, is like, I, like, Because, like, for you to say she's not broke, she was acting very weird this, like, whole movie. And, like,
she's fully aware of what the thing is well before anyone else. Like, which is probably why she didn't want anybody over as a Shomer, except for somebody who is an actual Shomer.
Then
that's why she was, like, so against him being there, because she could see it on him.
Okay, then why not just lie, be like, I'll do it myself? Because wouldn't that get you to roughly the same effect of, like,
I don't think that's how it works.
Why not?
I don't know. I'm not a Shomer. I don't know. Like, I don't.
Because the idea is, like, you just need someone to be there tonight. Just stay, like, I'll read the prayers myself. She looked like she was doing it when he got there.
I don't know. I don't. Like, I'm not Jewish. I don't know how this whole thing works.
Yeah, that works.
I don't know how any of this works.
Yeah, so kind of problematic. Yeah, so, like, there's just things that, like, about the monster I don't understand. There's things about Yakov I don't understand about his own personal choices to fall asleep on a job that he was doing that he really needed. But,
well, I don't think he expected a evil, malevolent, like, demon golem spirit to attack him in the middle of the night.
And that's when they always come, when you're least expecting.
Says who?
Says always.
Says always?
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Anything else you wanted to add to your colorful commentary?
No.
Okay. Well, wrapping this whole thing up, I'll go ahead and start it out and let you know if the film passes or fails for me and how many monocles. The film passes for me. I actually enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the journey that the main character had in this film. I really did enjoy a lot of the interjection of tradition and custom and recognizing ultimately the need for better mental health, I guess. You know, I have to appreciate that. I have to appreciate the fact that there is a push to recognize that grief and guilt untreated can overcome you at times. And if you're not careful, it can be a killer. And this is one of those instances where even somebody who is consistently steeped in religious custom and tradition can face things like this and still sometimes lose that ever ongoing battle. So I have to say the film passes for me, and I'm going to give it a 4.5 monocles. I'm going to give it a half monocle less because I do have to agree with you. It is a little too dark at times, but I do appreciate the film overall. I really do enjoy seeing other religions taking on an opportunity to overcome something like this, where I'm used to just, you know, a man in a black robe with a white collar holding out a cross saying the power of Christ compels you. So I have to appreciate that. And I'm actually anxious to see if this is going to become a growing trend, if other people are going to pick up on that and be like, oh, hey, you know what? Let me talk about how my faith handles this kind of thing, or so forth and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's just a great way to see diverse, you know, reactions to the otherworldly that we see and face in an ongoing daily battle. What about you?
Yeah, the movie passes for me. I take more issue with more of the mechanics of how things work in the movie.
Of course.
And personal choices of our main character, because I don't feel like I fully understood what he was thinking sometimes, or why he let certain things bother him when he had gotten previous proof that that same thing is either A, not real, or not really happening. Like, it was a bit confusing for me there. So, for me, I'm going to give it 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Because, like, it was impressive to see something that, like, I had no, like, context for. Yes, it was also a bit frustrating because I had just a tiny bit of context. Just like, but I understand that's a personal to me thing that I'm not gonna judge the movie harshly.
I would say that's true. yeah, and mind you, it's not a bad movie. It's just there's a lot of things, and for me, the push for more information and more knowledge is kind of more of a positive as opposed to, for you, without context, it was a frustrating point, and it was kind of.
Well, it's only because, like, if I had known less than I did, I'd be fine. Like, I just knew a little too much, and that was causing me problems.
Wow. Okay, I get what you're saying. Okay. Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com, where we got over 250 episodes. You can also catch us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter and Instagram page at filmlosophy101. This was a really unique film, and mind you, if you do get a chance, check it out. It's on all streaming platforms where you can get a video on demand option. It is available. Check it out if you're looking to find an opportunity to steep yourself into the Jewish folklore of a horror movie. I mean, it really is interesting, and go in with an open mind, and it's definitely going to be something that'll surprise you. So, but yeah, this was a great episode. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.